All right, what's up, guys? It's time for another podcast episode of Hip Hop Soiree. You got me, DJ Goose.
Bobby.
And it's been a while. All this stuff with the pandemic and everything has limited us in when we can get together and other stuff that happened, and it sucked. But I'm glad we're back. I've missed this a lot.
So do I. I enjoy talking about, obviously, hip hop a lot. So.
Yeah, and so we're hoping that, I mean, there's tons that we can cover. I mean, there is tons of stuff. But one thing we wanted to talk about first is we didn't actually get a chance to, like, make a formal list of, like, our top songs in 2020. And granted, like, I think everyone can agree on this. Like, 2020, because of everything that happened, like, not a lot of content came out. Not a lot of songs came out in the quantity that we were thinking of. And so, because of that, and because of just all the time that passed, we just kind of wanted to just have like an open discussion of just songs that we liked, and not only liked, but maybe we listened to some artists that we didn't like before, and now we did, or we gave some people a chance. So, let's begin with one. I think, I guess I don't want to steal any of Poppy's thunder, but I listened to some of the stuff he told me to, and I really, really, really liked it. I finally got to listen to Jadakiss's album, and oh my gosh, that was amazing. Like,
Jadakiss. I mean, he's pretty consistent. I mean, he's an all-time favorite of mine for a reason. So,
yeah, he was really good. And we've talked about how there's a lot of artists that will, they'll try to mimic or follow certain trends. Some that won't, some that will, you know, set trends. And Jadakiss just, that album was just so great. I loved how it wasn't so, like, for example, the beats were not very basic. They were like, there were levels to it. It was a little more intricate, and it went, like, and it changed, like, from the intro, which I think we actually talked about how people have, like, a very small attention spans, and, like, in some of the songs, his intros were, like, a minute and a half, and it just kind of reminded me still, like, of old songs that we got, like, back in the early 2000s and late 90s.
Yep, absolutely, and it was a shot of nostalgia, which, artistically, as far as the way it sounds, it sounded like a trip down memory lane. Again, you got the over minute intros to the songs, but the content is up to date, right? A lot of people think that just because they're old, they're gonna, you know, they're stuck in the past. No, what he raps about is current, and things of that nature. So I think it reflects on today's society, and he put together a great album that I really, really loved. And honestly, because of the whole pandemic, I hadn't been really invested in the music. I actually been mostly invested in the Spanish side of things, right? The reggaeton and Spanish trap.
Right.
So a lot of the hip hop stuff eluded me in 2020. So the fact that came out, and I'll, if you find, I'll go ahead and segue into the next album too, is the one from Nas, King's Disease.
Mm-hmm.
The same. I think on this album, Nas proves why he's considered a GOAT, an all-time great. He just lyrically is on point. He tells these stories, very current, talks about the times. Basically, people getting together to show, just, I guess, power, right? Power and unity. Again, as far as the lyricist, he proves why you can't overlook him. And it was refreshing to have that. I'm going to say refreshing, and again, no hate on the new school. I have actually defended new school quite a bit. But, you know, after a year of pandemic and not really having releases from what I think me and Goose have called the Big Four, being Jay, Kendrick, Lamar, Drake, and J. Cole, they were pretty much absent in 2020 as far as solo work goes, solo work album. So getting one from Jada and getting one from Nas to me was kind of sweet to receive in 2020.
It was. I was, again, I was very surprised at those two albums coming out, just because, I mean, you follow them more than I do, and so I wasn't expecting that. So when you told me about it, I was like, what? I was like, okay, I mean, I knew Nas came out with his mixtape, or I think that's what the album was called. I can't remember. But it was like stuff that he had already recorded and it wasn't anything new. So hearing that one was great. And like you said, like this year there wasn't like too much, and I didn't follow too much. And it was mostly because like everything just came out sporadically. It wasn't something consistent. And it made it hard to, I guess for me personally, just to keep up to date with that. But I wanted to kind of go back and listen to some people. Because I guess the biggest thing for me is that I am really set in my ways. And so listening to new people is really hard to do for me. And so like, I'm like, okay, you know, I'm going to see what some of these people that were talked about. I want to hear what they are. And so, there's two that I wanted to talk about. So the first one is Roddy Ricch, which he came out with that song that's called like The Box or whatever. And I did hear it and I was like, it's okay. It didn't really pop out to me. Then I just started listening a little bit more. The one that came out, that actually featured DJ Mustard is the High Fashion one. And it's actually, I think that one actually has like a more of a, it's more commercially successful. Actually, I think The Box is actually more, but I don't know. That one was really cool. It was really nice. I like the production of it, the beat. The other one, which I was not expecting to like was, Jack Harlow and his song What's Poppin'. And it's funny because when I heard it, I didn't really listen to the lyrics, the first part, but in like the beginning,
the piano.
Yeah. And I remember like, I think his fourth or sixth line, he mentioned Stockton, John Stockton. And that, for whatever, that piqued my interest. I'm like, I haven't heard a lot of people mention John Stockton in rap. And maybe it's because I'm very I haven't listened to like a whole variety of it, but just listening to that, I was like, oh, you've piqued my interest. And his song was very interesting. It wasn't like bragging. It was kind of more, I don't know how to explain it. It's just, he was just kind of telling like just his life. Like he wasn't trying to pretend to be anyone. And I really liked it. It was just, so I was pleasantly surprised to like that song. And again, the thing that sparked my interest was him mentioning John Stockton. He just said, pass it like Stockton. I was like, that he can't talk about anyone except John Stockton. That had to be him. So
yeah, and before anyone, sorry, because I didn't really anticipate switching gears really quickly. I thought we were going to be kind of on albums. I'll just give a quick recap. Anyone is like, oh, well, Drake did release Dark Lane demo tapes. That's a mixtape. That is not a studio album. We all know mixtapes usually are just a collective of several singles or songs that they just have laying around, right?
Yeah.
Other notable ones for sure was DaBaby had another big year. Blame It on DaBaby came out in 2020. Kid Cudi released The Man on the Moon. I think it's the third or second. I can't remember. I'm not a big Cudi fan. I actually didn't hear a lot of good stuff out of people I know that are fans of Cudi. So Big Sean, it came out with Detroit 2. I didn't listen to it. I think we've made it known on this podcast we don't care much for Big Sean. Props to him, though. Polo G came out with a song, and that I say that because – or not a song, an album. I say that because he's actually an artist I got into in 2020. My barber, he's a really good friend of mine. His kid loves Polo G. So anytime he'd play, I'm like, oh, you're listening to Polo to Dawn? He's like, no, it's Polo G. So he kind of put me on it. I started listening to it. It was pretty good. The Stallion had obviously a big year. Aside from WAP, she had several songs. I think, what was it? Sugar was the album that she had.
So, yeah.
There were a lot of notable albums. We just wanted to talk about the ones that we really, really liked. Benny the Butcher, I started picking up recently right at the end of 2020. So I'm segueing 2021 on Benny the Butcher. So I'll probably talk about him more as episodes keep releasing this year. But just wanted to kind of give that insight as far as some of the albums that came out last year. And I know Denzel Curry had a pretty big year, but I didn't listen to him either. And people will hate us if we don't mention it. Busta Rhymes had one, of course. That was like almost unexpected because, again, he's an old veteran. And then Eminem had his B-side to his Music to be Murdered By.
That one was weird.
Yeah,
I like him.
He's an all-time great, but I just don't think the playability of his music is very high. Not for me, not for my taste. So if I listen to it once, it's probably the end of it.
I think it just overall, like, his... I don't know exactly what. I think he's just kind of like just kind of ran out of fuel, which, I mean, some people were like, no, you can't say it. Like, it happens. Like, you, if you keep produce, if you keep coming up with stuff, like, after so much time, like, it's, you have to, like, try so many new things. And if you don't give yourself a break or something like that, it's just gonna come out like black. Like,
yeah, Wayne phased out. That's exactly why he even jumped over to the rock realm, is because he realized in hip hop, he literally fatigued himself. He even fatigued his fans. I mean, I think I've mentioned it here. Big fan of his. But even there was a point where him and T-Pain were on everything. Like, I'm honestly don't even want to hear those two anymore. As much as I like their songs, I want to hear something different. I want to hear something new. And he's made the transition. He came back. I loved when he released the Carter 4. So, yeah. So, I agree with you. They get burnt out. And that's why I think artists that release albums every several years are smart, because I don't know if it's their personal preference or if it's their marketing technique. Again, Jay is someone who does it. Kendrick has done it. J. Cole has. They're very meticulous about their work. And I'm not saying Eminem is, but, or isn't, but I mean, his persona is almost around kind of an angry persona. So if he doesn't have enough people going at him, then I don't know if his creativity is stifled. He needs kind of that sense of competition.
Yeah, he does. It's, I mean, you've kind of seen that. I guess I wanted to focus a little bit on him with, like, you know, he came out with like the Eminem Show, and then, which was like people praised that one. And then he came out with like three other albums and they just kind of flopped. And then I think it was Recovery that brought him back. And then I don't know. It's kind of been like this up and down thing. And then he like, he rode the wave.
Mothers LP, I think, is really what put him on the map first. So the first MMLP, and then you're right. The Eminem Show, people, that's really revered. I prefer MMLP, but he's had what you would call in the hip hop community some doozies for albums, a couple hits here and there. But I mean, he is a very unique style and an artist. But I don't know, his message is just different compared to some of the other ones.
It's like, again, it's his he comes off as being like completely crazy, because I mean he can't be all like hood and stuff. Like, I know he grew up in the trailer park, and you know he grew up on the. On a harsher life than most people do, but his the way that he wants to represent himself and to portray himself is just being someone who's just bat crazy, and it gets tiring after a bit. You're just like, okay, that's enough. We don't need to know. We don't need to know how crazy you are and how you want to kill your mom or do this to your ex-wife. Like, we've heard that. Okay, we're done.
I mean, by playability, yeah, it's very personal to him, and I think that's great, and that's a catalyst for a lot of great creativity. And he has some phenomenal songs. I think Stan is one of the all-time greatest hip-hop songs, period. But to your point, I mean, there's just a, like, how much can an audience really, and he has a massive cult-like following, right, for many reasons. But if he's only speaking about himself, not many people can relate to it, right? When you think of other artists, though, that kind of speak on behalf of, whether it be the streets or not, I mean, even backpack rapping, Kanye didn't necessarily rap about the streets, but his message was relatable to many, many people. And if you reach that wider demographic on it, then I think more people are going to, it has a, I'm not saying more people are going to like it. I think that's where the playability comes into play, right? Like, you can only be angry for so long. Most people, right? Most reasonable people, you go through a spot of being angry and then you're like, oh, okay, move on. Let's move on. Let's go through different phases of emotions. So I just, his music is so angry. It's not a music I care to just play while I'm like driving on the freeway or on my way to work.
And it's funny because he kind of dug himself that hole, because he's been that way for so long that if he tries to do something different, people are like, what's happening with Eminem? Why is he gone all soft? So I kind of feel like he kind of knows that too. So he doesn't know exactly what to do. So he just is still trying to be that angry guy, and it's just not working. But I don't know if him going.
He had a breakthrough, I think, on, and I think there's mixed reviews on it, which is strange to me because I actually think it's one of his better works, the Recovery album, where he basically, it's after a relapse, strangely enough, Recovery. he has like very positive messages that I think many people, if not all people, can relate to. He has some songs where he goes through his little angry phases and then kind of the hype songs. I don't know why people didn't like it. Maybe it's because they wanted to hear about him being crazy and chaotic the way you were saying. So funny enough, when he released Marshall Mathers LP 2, he had a lot of those songs back again, where he has a song with Kendrick. I forget what it's called, but they basically some bitch dies. So I know that sounds weird, but that's kind of what he talks about. Just some chick dying. And The Game of Love, that's the name of the song.
And Love, so, Game. But people Love Game,
like,
that's what
they seem to like MMLP more, or the second one, better than they liked Recovery, which I'm fine with, but I'm like, he gave you something different where more people could relate to, I think, and has higher playability than most of his other albums, but people didn't seem to like it, which I found strange.
Yeah, it's odd. I don't know. The general public is kind of odd. I don't know how else to... And I know, well, like,
yeah, especially with him, because he has the older school fan, like people our age, and then you have new age people that know about him, because I mean, he's impossible to ignore. I don't know. It's a mix. His demographic is very, very strange.
Yeah, to say the least. And so, yeah, sorry, I got sidetracked with the whole MM thing. I kind of cut into what you're going off with the songs and albums. I just want to talk about the Busta Rhymes song. Like you said, that one came out of nowhere. The sample of the Jackson 5 song, or at least that took me by surprise. I don't know if you actually knew this, or if you follow even stuff about Busta Rhymes at all. I don't even know how I found out about this, but I guess like you've seen him, like he like gained a lot of weight. I think he gained like over like 100 pounds, and he was like diabetic, and they were telling him like, you're gonna die soon. And so he like went on this like huge diet and lost 100 pounds and just crazy stuff. I don't know if you even followed that, Bobby.
Yeah, I have watched that. He had a big transformation. He got like a personal trainer. I can't remember who he was. I don't know if it was a Breakfast Club, but I watched just a snippet of it. I didn't watch the full interview. He just said, I looked at myself in the mirror and realized how far I had let myself go, and I had to do something about it. So started working out. I think over the course of a year, he just got yoked. Like, I'm like a gym bro yoked. And I don't mean gym bro where he has skinny legs, like all over, well-balanced. He lost his gut. He was looking kind of like Tracy Morgan,
yeah,
comedian, for a little, just like a bigger version of him. And but now he's literally just a yoked guy. So it's what happens, I guess, when you have as much money as he does. I mean, you can afford. So, and I'm not saying that's an excuse, but he just kind of put that mentality into it. And I think that a lot of that translated into his music, as far as, oh, I'm going through a change. Let me go ahead and make an album. Maybe his creative juices are flowing again, right? Because, you know, when you're in a healthy mindset, that transitions into a healthy body concept. I think that you just feel more empowered and able to do things and not necessarily worry about them and be super nitpicky or a bit more forgiving of yourself. And I think that it spoke well on his album. His album was really well-rounded. He had a lot of good features on it. He's obviously a very animated style rapper, much to like Eminem, how he's very unique, and his audience is like very specific. It's almost niche because of what they talk about and rap about. I think he's in that same group. Like, you can lump him in that same mindset. Same with like Tech N9ne. They have a very specific audience that they target or reach. But this one, very well balanced overall. I enjoy Busta Rhymes. I wouldn't say he was one of my all-time favorites, but it was a good album.
That's good. One album I didn't want to talk about was Commons. He came out with an album, and it was, you could tell that it was more, it was fueled by, you know, the what was going on with the protests, the Black Lives Matter, and all that. And you know, he's in, he I don't know, that album, like it was, it has actually some good songs, but overall, like I think with Common, you know, he likes to like not be, you know, common, not be like everyone else. So he tries to do a lot of new things, and he did that with this album as well. And some of it was good, some of it just, I think overall, I wouldn't listen to it like again fully. I think I listened to it twice, and after that I was like, I can't listen to it three times. I try.
I'm a Common fan, and I think I've said in one of the episodes before, I used to really like him. Then he went through a phase where I interpreted his behavior and personality maybe incorrectly. I just thought he wanted to be considered underground, but he wanted all the same level of success as a mainstream artist. So I'm like, hey, you're weird. You need to knock that off. You can't have both, right?
Yeah.
Long story short, I think that it's, hopefully this comparison is accurate. I feel J. Cole has been able to achieve what Common has always tried to, but he does it, J. Cole does it better. Meaning, Common has a very slam poetry approach to it. He is very lyrical. Lyrical to the sense where he's so lyrical, it doesn't reach a wide range audience, and for that reason, people overlook him, which, like, when we talk about greats of all time, obviously, if a lot of people can't really understand what you're saying, you're going to lose people, and that you lose points at the end of the day. You have to be kind of accessible to everyone, right? J. Cole, I think, blends it, because we both have described J. Cole as being kind of slam poetry-esque, but because he produces his own music, he can make it sound a very particular way. It conveys a different feeling. So I think these are, like, all things that Common strives for, sometimes fails at. Some of his albums have been really great at portraying it, but this album, I thought, was... The political aspect didn't bother me, but I think that the execution was pretty poor as far as the production and the beats they chose and the cadence in which you would rap or sing them in. So, I don't know. Maybe creative differences between him and I are the reason I didn't care for it. But the message, great, of course.
Yeah.
As a book, it'd read really, really well as far as music translating into it. I just think of a bunch of people wearing berets in a hip coffee tea shop and snapping their fingers.
Yeah,
he's
like, okay.
After two songs, it's like, I don't want to hear this same pace anymore.
Hear the bongos going off, like, it's not my thing. I think just to boil it down to, like, a simple thing, it just, to me, was just boring. Like,
I mean, it has to have a pizzazz to it, right? I mean,
yeah.
In another episode, we've mentioned that we ended up saying, you know, what makes music, the lyrics or the instrumentals, right? The acoustic, or what would it be, the audio?
Yeah.
And we determine the instrumentals, right? Because if it doesn't sound catchy or something like you want to listen to, then the lyrics can be great, but at some point it dies off. It ruins its significance. So,
yeah, like,
I think that's where he struggles. He just wants to keep it so stripped down, it just doesn't work.
Yeah, and it kind of reminds me of, I know a lot of people give a lot of crap to jazz, because jazz is actually very technical. Like, you have to know different time signatures and all this other stuff too, and kind of be good at reading, like, what someone is doing and then going off their, what they're playing, and then playing your own instrument. But, like, sometimes jazz does it, all that stuff, just to be different, and it turns people off, because it's like you're in this weird, like, 7/4 signature, and then you go from, like, 80 BPM to, like, 114 for, like, four measures, and then go back to, like, 60 and just change it just to be different. And Common's album was kind of like that. He's just trying to be so different. And
you lose the audience with it, because, I mean, the people that know it, yeah, you're going to get them for sure, because you're going to be like, this is so, like, incredible. But at the same time, you're going to lose the audience that doesn't have that kind of understanding of music. Like, to your point, jazz is technically one of the most difficult, if not most difficult, style of music to play.
Yeah.
But anyone that knows music really, really well, they can appreciate it. But the other one, this is random. It doesn't know what it wants to be. It's all over the place. Therefore, I'm not really going to listen to it, because there's nothing I can pick at and keep that as it's going, right? Like, same with What's Poppin', right? Like, I don't care for that song, but I'll listen to it merely for the piano. Bim, ba-da-dum, bum, 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 and then his cadence, right?
Yeah.
Just pop in. And then remix act. And just, like, all of this, it's catchy. As much as I don't care for that song, it's kind of cool. And he has a remix, and he had a bunch of different artists onto it. So I don't know if you want to kind of transition right over into maybe some of the songs we enjoyed of 2020.
Yeah, the remix. So that was one the remix is kind of weird, because, like, I kind of like it when remixes, like, even the main artist, like, has a different verse than the original one. It just makes the remix, like, okay, you have to hear, because it's even more different. That one was kind of weird, though, because it changed, like, what he was talking about and all that, so... But it was still overall good.
From a perspective that the artist decides to not just copy and paste what he already had, where he could have, right? It's his right. It's his song. He can keep it. But if he's like, you know, if I'm gonna have all these other artists on it, I'm also gonna just bring another verse to the table, and
that's how it starts. Yeah, it was actually good. There are tons that I could go over.
We can just give a couple. So,
yeah, you can go start first. I gotta get my thoughts together.
uh, So Benny the Butcher, East Coast, right? No surprise, I'm an East Coast fanatic. He has one called War Paint, and it has West Side Gun, and I can't remember, is it Connie the Machine or I mean, I can pull it up on my phone. I have it saved on my playlist for working out. Conway the Machine. So these are three rappers. Right, Griselda, which is a rap group. So when that trio just made the song War Paint, they just kind of have like a confidence in them, right? And they're signed to Roc Nation, I believe. And so they shout out Hove, my all-time favorite rap artist.
Right.
So it just has a lot of different elements coming from this group that kind of just finally made it big on the scene of hip-hop. I'd say it's almost triumphant in like how the Graduation album is from Kanye, but far more gritty, right? Kanye's sound in the Graduation is very timeless, almost euphoric and very happy. This one's New York gritty, dark, but hey, we made it. Here we are type of thing. So I loved it.
Okay. Mine has to go. I think I talked about this back in September. I can't remember when we after the long break we had our other episode. But I liked Blackpink. They're a K-pop group. But they're more they're obviously pop, but they tend to lean a lot more to rap and that part. And so they even had like Cardi B on one of their songs, which is a big thing. But like they had a song called Pretty Savage, and I really like that one. The main rapper girl, her name's Lisa, and she was just really good. She had great song. She had another song, another verse in Lovesick Girls that used very I didn't want to say unique, very clever wordplay, and I really liked it. Megan Thee Stallion. So like, I think you're a bigger fan than I am, which is fine. But she did the song, the BITCH.
Yep.
I like that one just cause it reminded me of Tupac, cause Tupac has the song, I'd Rather Be. And the chorus is, I mean, it's obvious she changes it to I'd Rather Be a BITCH. And changes it, but I like that one. It just, to me, it hit me because of the nostalgia thing. But I do give her credit; she's actually really good. So I'm glad I've given her more of a chance. Like it was kind of hard for me to do it in the beginning, just because, I don't know. I think sometimes, me personally, I feel like sometimes some female rappers need to push or need to be a little bit more. What's the word? Need to push the boundaries more. In terms of like, you know, a lot of rap songs are very sexual, right? There's a lot of ones, and they have to just be like over the top, or not necessarily that, but like when it talks about the female side of it, people are like, that's over the top. You know, going past
they have
that,
to really get noticed. Yeah.
And so, but it's like some of the stuff that they say, not her specifically, but some of the ones like, some of the wordplay that you would, what's the word? Now I'm going blank. So some of the words that they use to describe certain things just kind of is weird. Like there's one song in the 90s where she was talking about like her vagina, and she was talking about like the juices, but she was referring to it as boogers. And I was like, oh, that sounds disgusting. What the fudge is this?
Yeah, that's not something I care to compare the two, because I hate boogers.
Yeah, so it was just like, but it was, people talked about it, but it was just like, ugh, that's for the wrong reason. So that's why, like, sometimes, like, I think they have to try and do something to push for them to be noticed, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. I like Megan Thee Stallion because she's not afraid to mention, like, who she is. Like, she's a big lover of anime, and I love anime, and she mentions that in her songs, too, and I'm like, oh, I love that.
Yeah, I don't crush big on celebrities very often because I'm so far removed from them. I just like whatever they produce, right? Whether it be a movie or music and media. So she's one of the few I'd admit saying like I have a crush on, and anime was a big part of it too. When I saw her first and I thought she was extra gorgeous. I'm like, great music, gorgeous, great combo, right? Similar to like how I feel about Beyonce. And then all of a sudden I see that she loves something that I also really love. I'm like, oh my God, like that's just a whole nother thing. So I have a slight crush on her for that reason.
didn't she cosplay as Todoroki?
Yep.
Yeah. So I was like, dang, she's
the fire and ice. I'm like, ugh, they should have rebooted the series immediately and modeled a character after her. And that should have been Shota Todoroki. So, if you don't know who that is, sorry. You can type MHA, literally those letters, fire ice guy, and you'll know who that is.
Yeah, that's and that should help you get into anime. That one anime, it's great. you got any more
you can think of? So Rhapsody, our girl Rhapsody, which we're a fan of.
Yep.
She hasn't switched her style yet, unfortunately. Maybe she's stuck with that style the whole time. Again, I'm fine with it, but in order for her to gain more notoriety, I think she's going to have to switch it up a little bit. She has a song called 12 Problems, right? And we go back to, we don't want to make a political podcast, but obviously hip-hop is centered around this culture, right? This black culture. And so 12, what's common in the justice system with 12 is a jury, right? So we know she has huge props to Jay, loves Jay, signed to him. I got 99 problems, and 12 is still the biggest. I got 99 problems. Baton, bullets, triggers. Basically, with all of the political turmoil based on racism last year, it was a song that really kind of speaks to it. And again, she's lyrically inclined, very talented, fantastic approach. I like her delivery. It just has even like a, what would be the right way? Like, vocals that are very choir-esque, almost, you know those words better than me, Goose. I don't know, it's melodic, I guess might be the best word to say.
Mm-hmm.
Like churchy vibes, and it's not necessarily preachy, but it has kind of that sound, that aesthetic to it, and it makes it almost ethereal when it's speaking about something so dark. So if anything, it's conveying a dark message, an uplifting message in dark times, but you sound good or you feel good about it as long as you really pay attention, and it almost gives you hope. So I think it had to be a song I had to mention for sure in this episode.
Okay.
So it's called 12 Problems, Rhapsody. Definitely check it out. And then I have one more that has nothing to do with being uplifting. It's just straight hip hop party club scene type thing, I guess, if you want to. But do you have another one?
Well, we mentioned it was in the albums. It was in Jadakiss's album. I really love the song that I think is the first track is Pearly Gates, and I really like that, just the transitions from the piano to the strings, and then to him. To him starting his verse, like it, just that whole part just really intrigued me and just engulfed me, and I loved how they did that, because I said this before, like the message that you want in a song has to vibe and has to go with the instrumentals and the chords and the everything that you're going with, so there has to be like this. It has to be synchronized in some way. I mean, you can also go contrast, and that can help as well. But this one, I just aesthetically, everything reeled me in. Even the name Pearly Gates, and I was like, huh. And then just starting in with the piano, the instrumentals, and just it like building up to like to him finally speaking. Like it was just, I really loved it. I thought it was a great intro to the album. And so there's not much else I can say about that one, but that one just stuck out to me. That was Pearly Gates, just the whole production of it.
Sure. So me, I guess the last one I really liked that I mentioned Polo G earlier. Again, my buddy's son kind of introduced me to him, I'll admit that. And then it has two other rappers I never really ever showed an interest in, Stunna for Vegas and NLE Choppa. But it's produced by Mike Will Made It, who is an absolute bona fide producer. And same with Tay Keith. So Mike Will Made It came out kind of after a couple years with, I'm trying to think of who, I think it was with Will.i.am. I think he collaborated with Will.i.am and then kind of made it big. It was after Will.i.am and Black Eyed Peas were not necessarily a group per se. And then Take Heath started becoming big in the SoundCloud era. He kept dropping like crazy, crazy beats. So these two got together. They got on this track. It's called Go Stupid. It's Polo G, Stunna for Vegas, and NLE Choppa. And it's grimy, it's gritty, it's street, it's thuggish. But the line that really caught me for sure from Polo G, I'm a hip-hop fan. Obviously, I'm a hip-hop fan. I'm a basketball fan. So he says, before all this rapping shit, I was gangbanging and doing high speeds on the cops and shit. I'm straight from the shy, but I ball like a king up in Cali and shot like Stojakovic. And Stojakovic is Peja Stojakovic. He used to play for the Sacramento Kings, and he was known to, like, drain three-pointers. Mm-hmm. So when he dropped that line, I'm like, oh, my gosh. It was these new-age rapper, right? And so I'll admit, people that are, you would consider old heads, I wouldn't consider us old heads. I'm 30, you're 31. But, you know, people like 40 and above, like, these new kids don't know anything about old school stuff. But here he is naming someone who hasn't even been playing for probably over 15 years. And so I'm like, oh, that's a great reference. I like that reference. And there's a lot of great metaphors in this song. And I don't know, it hits hard. It's very, if you have a bass system, play it. It's going to definitely blast it.
That's awesome. I wouldn't think that they would use him in a song just because, like, his last name. I like his last name.
Yeah, he made something rhyme with Stojakovic, right? Yeah. And and you don't think of all-time greats. You don't. I mean, if you're a Kings fan, maybe, or if you're obviously a big basketball fan, you'll know who he is. But here's some kid who's from Chicago talking about Stojakovic, who played predominantly with the Sacramento Kings. So it was just that. I'm like, first of all, it sounded great. That's like probably the fourth bar in, or maybe second bar. I can't remember what part. It's at the very beginning of the song. And then the other two come in and do a really good job with their verses. So, oh my God, this song's dope.
That's awesome. That is really cool, because I actually know him. I think it was just because of his last name that I remembered him and him playing on the Kings for a bit. And you know me, I don't follow basketball at all, so I hardly know anyone's, but I remember him. So that's awesome. I have to listen to that now.
Yeah, he just had crazy three-pointers, and he won the three-point contest, I'm pretty sure, twice in the All-Star weekends. So European, obviously, with a last name like that. And he was known for that. Fantastic shooter, great free-throw percentage. So, again, kind of tying it into older days, he uses that as a metaphor. And then the other two come in, and again, new school rappers, a lot of the time they get hate from the old heads saying they're not lyrically inclined. They're all just based off of the hype or the instrumentals. Excuse me, they're carried by the instrumentals. But I think they do the instrumental justice. The song goes hard and the lyrics go just as hard.
Nice, nice, nice. All right. Well, let us talk about one more thing as our final topic here. And I'm going to let Poppy talk about it because he's the one that told me about it. And we actually talked about this offline a lot. But I think we talked for like 40 minutes about it. I don't think it'll go that long this time. There was something that there's like a, I think it was Instagram Live with Funkmaster Flex about a month ago. And he said some really crazy stuff. Well, I think it's crazy. But we're going to talk about it. But yeah, but Poppy, kind of give us like what happened here.
So Funkmaster Flex, I'm going to have to go back and maybe do some homework. I don't know if he dislikes Jay or if he's just doing this for clickbaits and just causing commotion. But his comment was, if it weren't for all of the ghostwriters Drake had, he would be better than Jay, like bigger than Jay. He'd be number one is what he was saying, which if you want to summarize it, he's basically stating that right now Jay-Z is the GOAT, the greatest of all time. And if Drake had not had that whole ghostwriting convictions, so to speak, that Drake would take the number one spot in being the greatest hip-hop artist of all time. And this is where TJ Goose and I ended up having a 40-minute discussion on what that means. Do we agree? What are our thoughts? So I don't know how you want to dissect this. I'll let you kind of moderate it because I obviously have a lot of thoughts. I know you have a lot of thoughts, so I'll let you decide how we want to tackle this.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's so many parts we can start. I think the first one is okay. Let's take out that part. Okay, let's take out the part that the ghostwriting. Let's look at all the I guess all the work. I mean, I don't know how many songs, like he's actually used ghost because I know there's a few. Was there actually like an entire album almost that he used ghostwriters, or was it is it just sprinkled here and there?
Yeah, that's the thing. So, you know, people are always like, oh, ghostwriter this, ghostwriter that. Now, both of us have mentioned on this podcast, I don't care that he has ghostwriters at all. I still think he's a great artist, a phenomenal artist, quite frankly. One of my favorites. All I will say is that now when you're going to be, if you're going to be talking about greatest hip-hop artists of all time, this is a very select group of people, right? And it's a niche group, right? And so hence hip-hop artist, part of the culture is very much prided on not ghostwriting, right?
Uh-huh.
And this community, keep in mind, is a community full of people that don't give a damn about other people sometimes, meaning they'll call you out if they need to or if they feel like it, right? So if you want to get technical with it, how many times have Jay or Nas or Tupac or Biggie or Kendrick Lamar or J. Cole been accused of having ghostwriters?
And been proven. Like, you can be accused of something, but...
That's my point. Yeah. Drake, however, he was called out notoriously by Meek Mill, and then a lot of these ghostwriters came out confirming yes, and then there are people that have worked with Drake in studio saying yes, he has had the ghostwriting with... Like, that has been confirmed on multiple accounts. And then it's been confirmed that artists such as Kendrick, J. Cole... and all the other ones I'd mentioned have also ghostwritten for other people like P. Diddy and all that, right? So all I'm saying is with someone who has been in the game as long as these old artists who have no convictions or even accusations of ghostwriting, it means a lot to them because that's part of the pure sport, right? The authenticity aspect of it. Now, while Drake may not, he does write some of his songs. He just doesn't write all of them. And some of his biggest hits are all ghostwritten, which I don't care. No big deal for me. But again, if you want to talk about being number one of all time, that's going to weigh heavily for any real hip hop enthusiast. And on that same token, your success has to be measured, in my opinion, on hip hop. So we all know Drake, who has blended perfectly the singing style, like this R&B with pop and hip hop. Yes, he does it better than anyone who's done it before him. In my personal opinion, he might be the best to have ever done it prior or coming, like whoever comes in the next 20 years, he probably will be better than any of them have done it. But that is not purely hip hop, right? So the difference between Drake and Jay is Jay does have some pop culture hits, right, with Beyonce, Mariah Carey, Rihanna. Yeah, he has those, but his style isn't reminiscent of any R&B. He doesn't really sing like that. He doesn't have a poppy approach, which is fine, but as far as a hip-hop artist through and through, he is definitely fits the bill in every category you could possibly think of as far as a hip-hop artist. So if you haven't guessed my... DJ Goose is in the same opinion. I don't see that being true, at least not Funkmaster Flex's opinion, I think, is not valid. Because I think, Goose, go ahead and talk about your point of removing all of his songs that have been ghostwritten, which is a substantial amount. But this is where I think you and I had the conversation. This is your take, and then I'll give my take afterwards as far as the ghostwriting.
Yeah, the whole thing is this. Like we've talked about, like a lot of his biggest hits are... We had ghostwriters on them. So if you take those away, like most people don't know all of his other stuff that's on there. I'm not saying that they're not good because they are. He does a lot of good stuff on his albums, but like all those big ones, like people wouldn't bat an eye on him. Like they maybe some would invest more, but no. Like for example, like he's to me, he reminds me. Like I said, you can be great and you can be like the gateway to hip hop, and that's what he kind of is, because like he's like if you hear like all these other artists, like a lot of them are like we like Jadakiss, we talked about, like for example, like, he's always been this way, and he doesn't, and even though he maybe evolved in production and songs and all that, he has this certain the way that he is and the way that he writes, and is very hard, and his voice, like it just great, and it it's pure hip hop on there. And he's kind of like, always kind of like goes back and forth between pop and rap. And one of the things that I've talked about with you, Papi, is that, you know, you want to, I think something about hip hop is you want to really be yourself. And that maybe sound corny and stuff, but that's how all these rappers were, like back in the '80s and nineties. They were in 2000, like they were just being themselves. They were just talking about what it was like growing up, how hard it was, how they found solace in maybe gangs, in women, in drugs, whatever it may be. So they talked about their life and they didn't have to make a persona to, you know, to relate to people. And we've talked about how I think what's been happening now, because rap has gotten so big, that there's more and more people that, you know, they didn't grow up in that type of environment. And Drake, we clearly know, didn't grow up poor. And I mean, he was on Degrassi. His mom was very wealthy. I mean, he grew up without a dad. But like, he doesn't I don't know. I've always felt like he tries to have this persona to tell people, hey, I'm a rapper too. Like I have struggles too, you know? But on the same side, he also is like, but yeah, but let's dance. Let's have this little challenge dance thing and make money that way. And I don't know. I think that if he had just stuck to, you know, I mean, you can talk about your life, whether how hard it is. Everyone has struggles, right? And kind of where I'm going with this, I just feel like him trying to make a persona and trying to keep it kind of led him to be like, okay, well, maybe I don't know about how to write this or that. Let me get someone who does. And that's why, like, to me, like, he can't be considered top, like, the number one. Like, that just takes you out of the running completely. And we've seen, like, how he deals with people going against him, meaning, like, people who want to beef with him. And it's funny because I think that's where you're tested, like, with your skill, with just everything about it. You're tested because someone wants to confront you. Someone wants to say, I'm better than you. And you have to, you know, put all of your skill, your intelligence in it to beat this person. And he's kind of fled from that a few times and kind of saying like, oh no, you know, I want to battle you, but under these terms and conditions, can you battle me? And only you can talk about this stuff. And if you don't, then it's not fair.
You're right. We've seen him tuck his tail and run multiple times. Or there's no shame in defeat. I want to admit that. I mean, you lose, it's part of the genre, but to your point, he wants everything to be met at his which it's a ruthless game. Like if you're gonna take shots at someone, then expect them to fire back just as strong, if not 10 times more. Namely, Pusha T is the one we're talking about. Mm-hmm. He's gone after Jay. Jay's jabbed at him a little bit. He chooses not to respond to Jay. They make up. He takes another subliminal or a direct hit at Jay. Jay again does the same. He does a small thing where he emasculates him or something, and Drake just again doesn't respond. So you're right, that in and of itself, I didn't even think of that, and that's a big, big part of hip hop. And I mean, if you're gonna claim the throne, so to speak, you're gonna have to be ready to defend it, just kind of like a UFC fighter, right? Or a any type of fighter where you have to defend the championship or any sports. And I don't see him necessarily doing that. To the point of the whole ghost. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, it just reminds you, like, when someone challenges to a duel and, like, and you're not showing up to that. They just want to say, oh, you're the fastest shot. Well, let's put our lives on it. I mean, maybe it's not that extreme obviously with beefs, but it's kind of like you're saying you're the best. Well, let's battle. Let's see how it is. And it's not like you're on the spot battling, right? You have time to write something and to...
It's not a freestyle, like, off the top of your head. Yeah, you have time to respond. Let's see what happens.
And a freestyle is a completely different talent as well. Because there are some great, you know, rappers that may not be that great at freestyling. And there's some great freestyle rappers. They have their own league and everything about that. But they may not be great at writing a song that has hits. So it's a very different talent on that. So, and so like, yeah, so they have time to write and to be witty and to, and to get the punches in that they want, and the and he just hasn't done. I think I showed you a clip from The Simpsons where Lenny, if you've watched The Simpsons, does a episode where they start out and they're playing basketball at the YMCA, and Lenny, he goes and tries to make a dunk, and he misses, and he lands on someone else, and he says, "That's a foul. I'm taking the ball and going home." Like that just reminded me of Drake with Pusha T.
He just calls bad game and then just leaves.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm going to entertain Funkmaster Flex's idea of, if it weren't for the Ghost Riders, let's pit Jay and Drake together and see who comes out on top. Now, keep in mind, for the sake of the argument of the greatest rapper to ever do it, I'm being very strict, and rightfully so. I think anyone that's, again, in hip-hop, that's what you're going to have to look at. You're not going to look at the pop hits. You're going to look at hip-hop, right? So when it comes down to, if you're going to classify the song as hip-hop, that's the, what does it count? Because that song, We're Going Home, just hold on, we're going home. I absolutely love that song. It is one of my favorite Drake songs. I'm not classifying that as a hip-hop song.
Yeah, I wouldn't. That's R&B.
It doesn't have the element of rap in it, okay? It just doesn't. So, I think when we initially talked about this, DJ Goose mentioned, if you take away his songs that are ghostwritten, what does he have to go up against Jay? So I took it a step further and I say, okay, let's just say the songs that were ghostwritten were written the exact same style by him. So let's say every song he currently has out, every verse he's ever featured in, was strictly solely written by him. Does that still stack up to the discography, the level of success, again, hip-hop, we're not counting pop songs, that Jay has? The significance, right, too, the cultural impact. Jay has an entire album, 444, which I'm not going to say this led any sort of black rights movement, because that's been in movement for decades, right? For anyone to say Black Lives Matter, in and of itself, that group is newer to civil rights, but civil rights movements have been a thing for several decades, and rightfully so. But he has an album that kind of embodies and encompasses, this is black culture, this is how we're being exploited, this is how we're doing ourselves damage. Like, it's very self-aware. It says, this is how we're causing ourselves damage and not doing ourselves any good. This is how we're being exploited. This is how we're going to get out of it. He is an influential artist who, there's a reason his name keeps popping up, right? He's been in it for three decades, yet many artists, including young ones, know his name, and he says it a long time ago in a song with Kanye. Hove's a living legend, and I'll tell you why. Everybody want to be Hove, and Hove is still alive. Like, he is a rapper's rapper. He normally makes most people's top five, if not top ten. For a reason. He has this level of influence. He's ahead of the game. Anything he does, usually the entire genre is paying attention and may emulate that style. Yes, Drake is in and of himself a fantastic artist. I think he's a performer like very few can become. But at the end of the day, he just doesn't have the same resume Jay has. So to say that he would be number one if he didn't have the Ghost Riders is almost an insult to any of the other artists that may threaten that number one throne, right? Like, I've always mentioned, I never really conceive Biggie Smalls or Tupac in my top five category for a number of reasons. But, you know, is an artist going to say, is he greater than Tupac? Because that's what you're saying, if he's also greater than, if he's the GOAT, then you've also dismissed Tupac and Biggie, which there are many people that would refuse to let go that Tupac is the greatest or that Biggie's the greatest of all time. So how would that make the argument work?
Can't. It's just so, it's mind-boggling. Just, I don't know where he gets this from. Like, I don't know if he's just hearing things that he wants to hear or if he's just delusional. Like, it's such a, like I said, it's such a audacious claim to put in there, because I mean,
you really the kid also like blew up kind of on Funkmaster Flex on a podcast, and he was like, Drake is greater than Jay-Z, you're telling me that Drake is greater than Hove? Like, even he was like, how are you gonna sit here and lay claim that Drake is better than Hove? And then Funkmaster Flex said, no, if it weren't for the ghostwriting, he wouldn't. And Gilly just goes, still, how is it he is greater than Hove? So
there's just so many things against Drake that just is.
Yeah, and you don't have to pick Hove. Pick your favorite artist. Like I said before, I don't consider Tupac the greatest of all time. But if you want to put him in there, while I would disagree, I can also reason with that, right? I can sit well with it because I've said it before. I think Tupac, at some point in his career, he may have already been eclipsed as far as the most influential, but there was a time for many decades, I'd say that, you know, two decades for sure, he was the most influential hip-hop artist of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And that in of itself is an argument to be made. I'm like, yeah, okay, if you want to put him in the GOAT, I can wrap my head around that because he has that to kind of fall on. And that's in and of itself an accomplishment not very many people can have. And by not very many people, I mean the most influential, that's one person. You could argue maybe Wayne has had a very similar amount of impact, or Jay has had a very similar amount of impact, as well as Biggie Smalls. I don't think Biggie Smalls has had as much impact as Tupac, but Biggie Smalls had that mafioso style down to a T, right? That style was just his flow, the way he sounded. He, in and of itself, might be one of the greatest sounding of all time in that regard. So if you want to put him at number one, okay, I can wrap my head around that. Not to mention he has two albums which I think are great from top to bottom. He just doesn't have enough discography for me to put him at number one of all time. But that's what I mean. If you're going to be like, oh yeah, Drake is greater than Hove, okay, that's fine. But is he greater than who you think is the greatest rapper of all time?
Yeah, I think the great thing about saying who's the greatest of all time is that everyone has an argument to be made for them. And the thing is, like, but none of them have, like, what Drake has, where it's like, oh, he's the greatest of all time, but he did this, you know? It's, and that's the big, like, they say, oh, it's just a small little thing. It's like, no, it's not. It's a huge thing. Because rap and that whole environment is all about, like, if you want to break it down, it's all about, like, you know, pride as well. Like, you take pride in the work that you do. And the fact that you can't say, I did this all on my, like, it makes the whole, line that he says, and I forget the name of the song always, when the song about LeBron, where he says like everyone had like a, oh my gosh, everyone had like a handout or had something he said, and he started one without one, like it kind of makes that line that he says irrelevant because like yeah, you may not have had a handout, but you had helping hands multiple times to make yourself as successful as you are. And so you have to contribute that help to your success. And the fact that you have to do that, it takes you out. You can't be in that
room. There's a difference. I mean, and this is, we're not discrediting, right?
For anyone that's listening to this
and thinking we're completely discrediting him. There is a difference between having certain things at your disposal, like certain privilege, right? If you want to talk about privilege, compared to other artists, right? So let's look at some of the artists who didn't have the privilege. Drake was co-signed by Wayne, and if Wayne hadn't picked him up, Jay-Z would have signed him. Keep that in mind, right? But Wayne and of himself, when he signed, like Wayne is one of the most prolific artists, period, right? Whether you like him or not, he is one of the most prolific artists. So he had the backing, the support, the access, anything that Wayne had access to, Drake did, because that was his protege. He's like, he picked up Wayne and Minaj, or he picked up Drake and Minaj, and there's a reason those two are highly successful. Wayne knew what he was doing. He brought him under his wing, and he treated them well, right? That was family to him. Now, Jay had support from other people, but he didn't have a label at his access, because if you want to go back in history and see what happened, no label wanted to sign him. So what did him and Dame Dash decide? They're like, oh, if no label wants to sign us, we're going to make our own label. First of their kind to do a successful solo label. And think of how many artists now want to do that themselves. Joey Badass, who is a newer artist, I guess. I mean, I wouldn't say he's super new now, but he's been out a couple years. He almost signed to Jay, and then he's like, no, I want to do what Jay did and make my own successful independent label, which is extremely hard to do. Drake didn't have to do that.
Yeah, but
on
look,
top of that,
yeah, and Drake look at that, like
some sense of money. So the access to like music and all this other stuff that other artists in more poverty stricken neighborhoods. The fear of their life, having to get home, put something on the table to eat. Like, he didn't go through those struggles. I don't know, again, that's not diminishing his artistry, but one path is easier than the other, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, Joey Badass, like, he was influenced by Jay-Z. And he's like, you know, even though Jay-Z, even though he has an opportunity to sign people, like, I wonder how Jay-Z would have felt like knowing that, you know, the way that he, the path that he chose to start making music to get to the top, someone else is going to choose that same way, even though he can give him help. Like that, I don't know how that would feel. That would feel like amazing to me. Be like, you know what, you're going to try and do the same thing I do. Like, you have my support, you know, if anything, yeah, if I can do anything to help you, then let me know. Like that. And like I said, as much as Drake is very influential in terms of, like, you know, combining and mixing genres and knowing and getting the right people to get a hook and something that will just be catchy for a long time or to make money quick, he just isn't gonna, I just don't see him having, yeah, that same type of influence on a deeper level than Jay-Z has.
Yeah, for sure. So let's, just to make it, whether people think we sound biased or not, I think we made very solid points. So whatever, do what you want. We may sound like haters. I still mention Drake is one of my all-time favorite artists, for sure. I'm going to go back to the whole hip-hop concept, right? Through and through, Jay is a hip-hop artist. When you see Jay and you hear Jay, you know it's Jay. Okay, this is a hip-hop track. Very rarely does he dabble. And when he does dabble in the whole pop scene, his verses still are strictly hip-hop written, right? Like, labeled hip-hop all over the place. Yep. They just sound hip-hop. That's not nothing wrong with Drake, but if you think of our athletes like Bo Jackson, who played multiple sports, playing in the other sport, while it showcased his athleticism, right? Okay, he's versatile, right? Drake is versatile. That accolade does not carry over into a different genre, right? Meaning that, okay, if you have a number one pop song, that's not a number one hip-hop song. I'm sorry to tell you. That's just, they don't overlap. As much as people may want to use that, that doesn't overlap. Mm-hmm. His hip-hop accolades are nowhere near the same level as someone like Jay. So in that essence, I just, it's not a statement I can ever accept. And that's me even saying, let's say the whole ghostwriting thing never happened and every song lyrically was the exact same. He just doesn't have that accolade. So still love Drake, love his music. I don't care that he has ghostwriters, but for Funkmaster Flex to say that he would be the GOAT if he hadn't had ghostwriters is absurd, because I even looked at it saying, okay, his discography doesn't change. It's all the same. Sounds the same. Exact same lyric, word for word. I still don't see him beating Jay.
Yeah. Yep. I'm in agreement with you. This, I think we've covered that all. And I think it's just very clear. I mean, if anyone who's listening can give us more examples or, you know, defend Drake, by all means, like I would love to read or hear whatever it is, because I would like to see more on the other side. It's just, I honestly just don't think there is anything. Like, even with stuff that Funkmaster Flex said or tried to expand upon, like, he just kept beating the same horse. Just kept saying, oh, if it wasn't the ghost, like, he always went back to that and he couldn't go past anything to give a solid defense on it. So I would love to hear that, you know,
yeah, I think part of that has to do with, you know, people like us where it's like, yeah, I can give him his credit, but if you want to talk about greatest of all time, I'm sorry, you can't have ghostwriters. You no longer are in the running. The artists that have said that exact same thing are Kendrick. Black Thought from The Roots has also said it. I think he was with Sway, and Sway was like, what are your thoughts on ghostwriters? He's like, listen, if you have ghostwriters, that's fine, but if you want to talk about top MCs of all time and you have ghostwriters like that, you're not in the discussion anymore. And I'm 100% in agreement with that.
Yep.
Like, again, like I said, I will always listen to Drake. I support his music. I love his music. But if you want to ask me who I think are the greatest MCs of all time, Drake is not in my top 10 for that particular reason. Even I've dropped Kanye out of my top 10 because recently it's come out and proven that he's had a couple ghostwriters on some of his biggest songs. Like when I heard Jesus Walks was ghostwritten by Rhymefest, that hurt me. I'm like, ah, there goes, I mean, Kanye from, not that he necessarily was in my top 10, but I've always considered him up there. So I'm like, okay, when it comes to all-time best, he dropped a couple notches for that reason.
Yeah, and rightfully so. I mean, I think what we're good at is being have integrity on that, to be like, even though he's someone, and I know you really, really love Kanye, and so like you said, it probably hurts you more to be like, you know, personally, I have to take him down because he's not fitting what I know to be, you know, the requirements to be considered the greatest of all time. So I give you props for that.
If I'm going to do that to Drake, I have to do that to Kanye. That's only fair. And I use that again as an example to show hopefully how fair we both try to be. I think that's a fair example, right? Kanye is on a pedestal. I'm not going to say was. He still is on a pedestal for me as a hip-hop artist, but the whole ghostwriting things, when it turned out to be true, I'm like, hey, well, I have to be a purist. If I'm going to knock out other people from this spot because of these, I'm going to have to do the same to him. So either way, support the artist. Love Drake. I'm excited for Certified Lover Boy that comes out this year. I did make claims in 2019 that in 2020 we'd get a solo studio album work from Jay, Drake, J. Cole, and Kendrick. Didn't happen, but at least 25% of it is being true for this year, for sure, for me. I'm blaming the pandemic last year for not having the solo studio albums from those four.
Yeah, so I agree.
We're a quarter of the way there. I'm still pretty much positive we should see work from the other three, and I'm excited to see if we get it.
Yep, me too. I'm excited for this year. It's going to be a lot better than last, music-wise at least. So, yeah, that I think that's a great point to end this podcast episode. Remember, this hit is Hip Hop Story. You can listen to us on Podomatic.com. Leave us a comment, send us an email at hiphopsoiree2018@gmail.com, and we'll read anything that you send to us. So, yeah, thanks for listening. This is DJ Goose.
This is Bobby.
And this is Hip Hop Soiree.